to die, to sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub, for in that sleep of death what dreams may come, when we have shuffled off this mortal coil, must give pause. That's from Shakespeare's Hamlet, from the famous To Be or Not to Be soliloquy. And it's in this short passage that we also find two idioms. There's the rub and mortal coil. Shuffle off this mortal coil. That had been floating around for me and that I'd been wanting to take a closer look at. Since I started this podcast, I've been keeping notes, jotting down idioms I hear, and these two popped up recently, independently, in different contexts, by themselves, but they popped up right next to each other in my notes. And so when I went to investigate their origin, I was surprised to see them appear like this right next to each other. A tiny coincidence, but a pleasing one, in the way that coincidences usually are. And some say that coincidences are God's way of staying anonymous, or that coincidences are signposts, meaning that you're on the right path. G.K. Chesterton said that coincidences are spiritual puns, or maybe they're just another name for fate, luck, accidents, answers to prayers, karma. It's been said that it's hard to believe in coincidences, but that it's even harder to believe in anything else. Nabokov wrote this about coincidences. A certain man once lost a diamond cufflink in the wide blue sea, and 20 years later, on the exact day, Friday apparently, he was eating a large fish, but there was no diamond inside. That's what I like about coincidences. And I've started a coincidence collection of sorts, more because I don't know what else to do with them, but collect them and trot them out from time to time to admire them. And it began when I was riding my bike from California to Idaho for my sister's wedding, pedaling along mile after mile, watching the asphalt go slowly by, seeing each little dead animal roadkill on the side of the road with more intimacy than I wanted. And I was crossing the Oregon High Desert in the heat of the day, no shade anywhere, and I was maybe getting a little bit delirious, listening to Neil Young's Harvest album through my headphones, when just as he sang the lyric, slipping and sliding and playing domino from the song Are You Ready for the Country, I saw a discarded domino lying along the side of the road. And I've always regretted that I didn't go back and pick it up as a memento and to ensure that this really happened, that I wasn't just hallucinating. But I was trying to crank out the miles and I was climbing a hill and didn't really want to stop. And I think I was a little bit out of it too, and that the coincidence didn't really set in until I was well past the domino. But what do you do with something like that? What kind of spiritual meaning could possibly be derived from the fact that among the hundreds and hundreds of miles and scraps of litter, I happened to see a domino at the precise instant Neil Young mentioned a domino in a song I don't even really like particularly? And what kind of profound significance can one draw from a domino? I can't come up with much except that, yes, maybe it was a signpost that I was on the right path. But ever since, I've started to pay more attention to coincidence, seeing if I could encounter one that was even more remarkable for the improbability of two random events happening to occur simultaneously. And this domino one held up for a good 13 years, until last summer when I was flying out to San Francisco for work with a layover in Chicago. And I was starving there at the airport in Chicago, but I didn't have time to sit down and eat before the next flight, so I picked up some hot pizza and went to get in line to board the plane. And I arrive at the end of the line just as this other woman is arriving, a tall, plain woman in her late 50s maybe, wearing these white orthopedic sneakers. And I let her go ahead and stood right behind her in line, just smelling that delicious aroma wafting up from the pizza box in my one hand, my luggage in the other, just wanting nothing more than to sit down on the plane and dig into that pizza. And I've been known to get a bit hangry from time to time, so I was in real agony looking at how slowly the line was moving. But what had me really concerned was that this was one of those disorderly lines where people that have been lingering nearer to the check-in counter will try to join right up front there when their seating zone gets called, even though they haven't been standing in line, that line that goes all the way back. And whether they can get in or not just depends on whether people in the line will let them in. And nobody was really welcoming them in, so they're just standing there waiting for the end of the line to pass them by so that they can join at the end, as they should. The woman just in front of me let some people in. And then these people let some others in, and they let others. Now I'm a good 20 people back in line from where I should be. And I can see those people who are just two spots ahead of me entering the jetway, and I'm never going to get to sit and have a free hand to eat my pizza. And why did this woman let them in? So I'm shooting daggers at the back of her head, super annoyed and hating those ugly white sneakers. If only this woman hadn't come. Well, why did I let her in front of me? One person, and now I'm down 20. But I eventually get on the plane, and the pizza's worth the wait, and I make it to San Francisco, where I proceed to get a rental car and then drive across the bay 30 minutes to my hotel in a city called Alameda, one I'd never been in before or even heard of. And I check into the hotel, do some work for about an hour, a couple of calls, and hunger starts calling my name again. And it seems like whenever I go out to California, I like to go get a double cheeseburger animal style at In-N-Out first thing, because there are no In-N-Outs here on the East Coast, and I get a craving. So I look up the nearest one, and it turns out there's one in Alameda not too far away. So I drive over there, have to cross this bridge to get out to this island, and wondering where the heck I am. But man, I'm hungry again and just can't wait to get in. And you can probably see where this is headed, but I sure didn't. I swung into a parking spot, made a beeline for the front door, hoping the line wouldn't be too long. And to my utter disbelief, shock really, a few steps ahead of me from another direction came that woman from the layover in Chicago, walking into In-N-Out with what I assume is her husband. And she gets in line right in front of me again, delaying my cheeseburger by a couple precious minutes probably. I mean, what are the odds? 30 miles from the airport, a few hours after leaving the airport, at a random In-N-Out in a town I'd never even heard of. If I'd spent a couple more minutes on a phone call, this wouldn't have happened, for example. What is going on? Is she stalking me, spying on me, a private investigator hired to follow me? I mean, really. This was unbelievable. So I said, excuse me, I recognize you. You were in my line at the layover in Chicago. I was right behind you. And she's genuinely shocked, too. You could tell that, you know, it was just a coincidence. Although I could also tell that she was a little suspicious of me. Was I stalking her? What's going on? And so it was awkward. And it was awkward again when, after my burger and fries, I come out of the men's room only to run into her coming out of the women's room across the narrow hall right at the same time. And so I wonder, should have I gotten her name or something, seeing if there was some deeper connection or reason to this coincidence? But I think we were both too weirded out to pursue it. And so that was kind of the end of it, or that was the end of it, so far as I know anyway. But with the coincidence that bizarre, it's hard not to expect there to be some kind of meaning there. And then last September, I was riding my bike home from work when I saw this really obese guy standing at the crosswalk, and the sign was for walk, but he wasn't walking. And he looked like he was in bad shape. His shoe was untied. He was sweating profusely, clutching at his chest. So I stopped to ask if he needed some help, and he said he was okay, he just needed a minute, and he did look like he'd be okay. He wasn't having a heart attack or anything, so I just asked if I could tie a shoe for him because I wasn't sure if he was able to at that moment, and he said, yeah, that'd be appreciated. So I tied his shoe and went on my way. And then riding along the Potomac in Gravelly Park, I came across a kid on the side of the bike path, maybe 7, 8 years old, that was sitting there with his bike, and he'd gotten his shoelace wrapped around the crank set, and he was crying. And his dad was, you know, clear up the path, so I stopped and helped him untangle his shoelace. And then I rode on, thinking, what a bizarre thing that was. I hadn't tied an adult shoe for them maybe ever as a good deed. And then right after that, to be untying a kid's shoe to help them out, you know, what are the chances? But again, what kind of meaning to take from something like that? Another signpost, perhaps, or just a curio to take out and look at from time to time, or to share on a podcast. But whatever coincidences may be, there's no doubt that even the smallest of them help to pepper a life with interest. So I'm grateful for coincidences large and small, like having There's the Rub and Mortal Coil pop up next to each other. But this is a podcast about idioms, not coincidences. So welcome to Idiom America, and let's get started on our idioms by looking at those from the beginning. There's the Rub and Mortal Coil, and then we'll move on to some other rub idioms. There's the Rub, of course, is an idiomatic way to refer to a big problem or difficulty about a situation. My car got towed and all I need to do is pay $150 to get it back, but there's the rub. My wallet's in the glove box. You can also hear this one as that's the rub, there lies the rub, there ends the rub, here's the rub, and variations on those. So what's the rub that Shakespeare was talking about? Well, Hamlet was talking about suicide in that passage, to choose not to be. But the rub in choosing to not be is who knows what kind of dreams may come in that sleep of death. And then more broadly, non-idiomatically, a rub back in Shakespeare's day, that was a term that came from the game of lawn bowling, where a rub was some fault in the surface of the green that stops a bowl or diverts it from its intended direction, gives it a little bump that sets the ball off course. And the term was first recorded in this context a few years before Shakespeare's use here. And you also hear this one as rub of the green, in the sense of something that's just bad luck and can't be helped. You hear this one sometimes in golf, referring to some little accident that stops a ball in play, hits a goose on the runway or a small twig on the putting green perhaps. And then looking at that other idiom from this passage, shuffle off this mortal coil, which means of course to die. Before I shuffle off this mortal coil, I'd like to experience a total solar eclipse. And back in Shakespeare's day, coil meant tumults or troubles. It was just a poetic way of referring to the hardships and turmoil of this mortal life, the trouble that comes through being alive. And I think part of the reason that this one stuck around like it has is that there's some kind of a latent connection to something like thread coiled on a spool, and how life and time seem to unwind themselves, kind of like yarn uncoiled from a spool. And while we're on the subject of death, I should probably mention the idiom rub out, or rub somebody out, meaning to kill someone, assassinate them. And this can also mean obliterate or destroy completely, as if by rubbing, like what the Brits call the rubber or eraser on your pencil can do. And this one's pretty self-explanatory, just some hyperbole on the original meaning. So you can rub out, but you can also rub in, as in rub it in, to remind someone of something stupid or bad they did, to make somebody feel worse about an already bad situation. Okay, I get it. It was dumb. No need to keep rubbing it in. Or to make somebody jealous. Yeah, grease for 3 weeks. Sounds great. No need to rub it in. And this one probably came about as a shortening of the older idiom to rub salt in someone's wound. Also heard as pour salt in an open wound, or simply salt in the wound, meaning to make someone feel worse about a bad situation. Often used to describe someone who's being intentionally cruel or insensitive by highlighting someone's misfortune or shortcomings. And back in the day, they actually did rub salt in wounds. Sure, it would sting a bit, but it did help to control infection. But as medicine progressed and this became no longer a common practice, it came to mean to add insult to injury, to twist the knife, to kick someone when they're down. And a related idiom here is to rub somebody's nose in it, meaning to remind somebody of a humiliating error experience. And that, of course, is alluding to rubbing a pet's nose in a mess it's made, presumably to try and teach it a lesson. So we got rub out, rub in. How about rub off? As in, her sense of playfulness has rubbed off on me, meaning to have somebody's personal qualities, behavior, opinions, etc., become part of your character as a result of spending time with that person. It's not really clear where this one came from, but it probably has something to do with the idea of the rubbing that comes with close proximity, like when you rub elbows or rub shoulders with someone. meaning to mingle with them, spend time socially with them, schmooze, hobnob. And just like hobnob, the idiom to rub shoulders with often has the connotation of mingling with the rich and powerful, those of a higher social status. Whereas to rub elbows, that can have more of a flavor of mixing it up with the common people, the hoi polloi, the kind of crowd where you might have to throw an elbow or two. Although it can be used to refer to hanging out with the rich and famous as well. Both these idioms generally mean spend time socially with people you don't know well, as opposed to with your friends. And from the shoulders to the elbows and down to the hands, we get the idiom rub your hands, meaning to be in greedy anticipation of something, or to have a feeling of excited expectation, or to be pleased because something good has happened. And you often hear this when used with the word glee. I rubbed my hands with glee at the thought of the donuts in the conference room. And this is another one of those idioms like tip of the hat or flip the bird that can be conveyed both verbally and physically. We've all seen the villain rubbing his hands together at the commission of some dastardly deed, for example. Finally, let's look at to rub somebody the wrong way, meaning to irritate or annoy somebody. I don't know what it is about him, but he just rubs me the wrong way. And anybody who's ever petted a cat or a dog or a guinea pig or anything really knows there's a right and wrong way to rub. Or think of a bird and the idiom to ruffle someone's feathers, kind of a similar thing there. And there are those that think that this one alludes to rubbing an animal's fur in the wrong direction, and that makes the most sense to me, but there are those out there on the internet that posit that this one comes from colonial times when early Americans would ask their servants to rub their oak floorboards the right way. Apparently the wrong way was to not wipe them with a dry rag after a wet one, which would cause streaks to form and ruin the floorboards, leaving the homeowner annoyed. I can't find any real support for this one, though. But it does kind of connect to another idiom from an earlier episode, against the grain, as it does seem like there's a right and wrong way to rub wood if you're looking for a smoother rub, at least. Well, hopefully you've enjoyed hearing a bit more about some rubbing idioms. But just like with encountering some striking coincidence, what are we supposed to do with this important information? There's the rub.